This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank our premier sponsor, Iberia Bank, for its support of this podcast. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered right here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. For more information, please visit IberiaBank.com. Robert Bio, who many of you know as Popey, is our guest today. He serves as president of J.B. Mouton, the construction company established by his great-grandfather, John Birchman Mouton, in 1915. J.B. Mouton has built many of our community's most iconic landmarks, schools, churches, and medical buildings. A few you may be familiar with are the Light Center, St. Pius Catholic Church and Elementary School, ESA's Lower School, CGI, the Iberia Bank Tower and River Ranch, and car dealerships such as Moss BMW and Kia Sterling. They've also renovated St. John's Cathedral, the Academy of the Sacred Heart, the Cajun Dome, Iberia Bank Tower downtown, and St. Charles College in Grand Coteau. So, Popey Bio, we have a lot to discuss today. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. I want to put in a plug for the guy who's made our podcast possible, Chris Raider. We're taping at Chris Raider's offices with Jason Sikora in the Light Center, which you and your company built. It seems like there's so many iconic buildings, as I said in the intro, that were made possible by you, your family, and your team. Why don't we go back and let you start talking about the history of J.B. Mouton?
J.B. Mouton was a farm boy who struggled to make a living at farming and ended up going into work as a carpenter. First job being at Central School, which is now the site of the old post office and old federal court building downtown, was his first job. Not sure of the year, but not too long after that, he went into business for himself in 1915, started adding on to homes, building homes, and doing minor work.
Let me ask you about that. He wasn't, he knew carpentry, but he wasn't trained as a professional carpenter. He was a farmer in his early days, is that right?
Yes, of course, anybody on the farm is a jack of all trades,
right.
So he brought that. He was looking for work, and he applied at the school that was under construction for work, and they told him to come back tomorrow with his coping saw. So he went, as a free thinker he was, to the hardware store and bought a coping saw on credit, not knowing what it was to be used for. He asked the person selling to him what it was for, and they explained that was to cut crown moldings, and he went to work on that school. And from there, he started his career as a builder.
As a residential builder at first?
At first, yes.
Right. Right. I know in the early days, I've read that A. Hayes Town worked with him at an early stage. Can you maybe talk about that? That's the iconic. I'm using that word iconic a lot, but these are such big names in the industry.
The story behind that is, in A. Hayes Town's own words, his father feared that he was going to be an artist, okay, and had recently done some work at his store building shelves in which J.B. Mouton built them. So to open his son's eyes, his town's eyes, he added on to his house and got Haystown to draw the plan for his daddy's house, and J.B. Mouton built the house. Thereafter, J.B. Mouton hired Haystown to do other work for him. And Haystown, in a letter he had written to my great uncle Francis in the early 80s, said that was his first commission, was for J.B. Mouton.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Because he's known for his, you know, a lot of his commercial work, but of course in this area, his residential architecture.
That's correct.
It's outstanding. So your great-grandfather was an early part of his career.
Yes, always in my career was hoping I'd have an opportunity mm-hmm. to build a home for Mr. Town, but it never materialized.
Right.
We had a client at one time who had drawn up a house and was ready to build it, but he decided not to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of my regrets, I guess, to say.
Well, yeah, well, you've got a lot to share. So let's go back to your great-grandfather. He started out as a residential home builder, and he opened up in 1915, right before World War I.
Yes.
So for quite a while, he was building homes. Is that correct?
Yes, and it was somewhat struggling back there. Mm-hmm. He had, I think, 6 or 7 children, and... you know, it was a lot to feed and educate the whole family. Then his son joined him sometime in the 30s, his oldest son, late 20s, early 30s, mm-hmm. Bill Mouton.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept building houses and occasionally would build a commercial building. Most of the commercial building of those days were governmental buildings. They didn't have the thriving private sector buildings that we experience today. It was primarily governmental buildings, so they built a lot of schools and those types of projects
mm-hmm.
back when.
So in the 1930s, I don't know if it was during the Public Works Administration or whatever, but I saw that they branched out into commercial
yes.
real estate, commercial building. So that's when things really took off.
Yes, it did. I'll mention they also did a lot of churches. Those mm-hmm. were always been very special to our family. But that's when everything took off up until the start of World War II, when building materials were rationed and the business had to cease operations. During that period, the youngest son, who was working part-time for him in accounting, went into the service, Francis Mouton.
Mm-hmm.
And his oldest son, Bill Mouton, took some of the equipment they had. I think it was a concrete mixer, and went to Fort Polk to work with some folks that were building Fort Polk. So after the war, they restarted the business again and got back up and running. And
right.
That's how J.B. Mouton and his two sons, it was called J.B. Mouton and Sons at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Son initially, then Sons.
Sons, yeah.
The second one joined them. And so that's the history of how they got to that period of time.
Right, right. So after the war, when did things really pick up again? Do you know that part of the history about some buildings or
yes, my dad was a trained civil engineer. He finished his education after the war. And in 1949, he went to work for his grandfather and with his two uncles. And they were doing commercial work. Schools at the time was quite popular. As a matter of fact, one of my dad's first jobs was a contemporary design building by Ahes Town on the air base in Iberia.
Okay.
It's a semicircle building and that type of stuff. And then it was just a lot of schools and a lot of those type of buildings mm-hmm. over the years.
Right, right. And then I know in our opening I was talking about some of the newer buildings, but would you maybe just name some of the large buildings? I mean, I mentioned Chase Tower, which used to be F&B mm-hmm. Tower, but a lot of the buildings that we all take for granted have been constructed by J.B. Mouton.
Yeah, we have quite a resume. If you're in business that long, you certainly should, I guess. We had a lot of the schools that we did. In 1958, we built Pecan Island High School, which was pretty big milestone in our company's mm-hmm. history. And we built Crawley High School, Cancro High School.
Mm-hmm.
We added on to Lafayette High, Woodville, Como High School, remodeled Alamo, Falk, and Montgomery, and built many other schools. We
mm-hmm.
built a school in Hathaway, Louisiana.
Where's that?
North of Jennings.
Okay, thank you.
That was rather interesting, and this is one of the fun things that we like about building. It was an old school, two-story school, where you see the in pictures, and the school burnt down, was struck by lightning. And they tore down everything but the front door. And we built the new school around the front door in Hathaway. And it's nice, a very rural community, a farming community, but the people there was just so so sweet and appreciative, because in, like in so many small communities, that's the hub of the community.
Right.
So we did a lot of schools over the years, commercial buildings. Into a big milestone in our career was when the private sector started building here. And you mentioned what's now the Chase Towers was one of our first buildings that we built utilizing a process that's now called CMAR process, in which we work as a team member with the architects and owners to build the project. That's how about half of the work today we build is engaged, even for the public sector now.
That was in the mid-1970s?
That was 1973 we built that one. And we went on to build even buildings, Griffin Hall at UL we built in the mid-60s. Actually, we added on two stories to Dupre Library, and my dad would always brag that he did that without getting a book wet. But
that's quite an accomplishment here.
Well, he did. We built the airport in the early 1960s, and we remodeled it in the late 1980s. So we've had histories with a lot of different buildings. Following the Chase Towers project, Lafayette was in a boom. Here in Lafayette, all companies were here. It was unbelievable. And we got into building a lot of apartment complexes back in those days, which we hadn't previously built. We built Bayou Shadows.
Oh, wow. And Country Harris.
Country Harris, absolutely. We built a lot of office buildings for him, which used to be the Chevron building across from Acadiana Mall. We built some of our, I guess, more notable buildings, the Stone Energy building, if you've ever been in that.
Yeah,
that
it's beautiful.
Gorgeous. That's one of my favorites.
That atrium is just outstanding.
I was just a kid building that. The Park Tower building on the corner of College Saloon and South College Extension,
it's
which
beautiful.
Is another monumental building. La Haye building. And we built a bunch of buildings in during that period, up until things crashed in 1982. In fact, in 1982, we were employing about 350 people. In 1985, we were employing 28.
Oh my gosh!
It was just devastating to our career, and as a young family man myself. Having young children, and there was not much opportunity here at all.
No, I moved here in 83, doing oil and gas work as an attorney. By then, I guess by 86, it really bottomed out.
Yes, it it bottomed out, but it was very slow coming back.
But you saw it first, because people weren't building new construction.
And building lags economic recovery by about a year to 2 years. That's just the cycle of it. So those were some monumental times for us. It was very learning. I once kidded my dad that I had learned more in the last year during those periods at one time than all the formal education he had offered me.
In survival,
but it was good times.
You must have lost a lot of talent, though, that left town or just got into other fields.
I was most disappointed. One of our challenges was that we have always been a very employee-oriented organization, placed great value in our employees, and we had so many qualified employees that we had no opportunity for. And then what do you do? Do you keep the old ones that have been servicing you so long? Or do you keep the younger ones that are going to be your future? That was a monumental decision we had to make, and our answer was we did both. And we got the older ones and the very younger ones who were promising. And the very younger ones today are the old ones who are now represent our superintendents in the field. Yes,
yeah.
We have a tremendous longevity of employees with our firm. Some of them worked almost entire careers only with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, but I never realized it until I own the business on my own. The hardest part of the business is your obligation to your employees when in slow times. It's very difficult to have to send a man home when you know they need work. There's just no opportunity there.
Were you running the company at that point, or was it you and your father?
That was in the mid to late 1980s.
Uh-huh.
The business was owned by my dad at that time, and shortly after that, I bought into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have bought in earlier, but there was no opportunity to buy in, as there was no opportunity in our business.
Right.
And bought him out over a series mm-hmm. of time, and that's how I came to acquire the business.
I'm curious, being one of 17 children, I know you have two older sisters, and then you're the third in line?
Fourth
in line.
Yes.
Did the other family members, were they wanting to go into the construction business?
My dad never encouraged any of us to do anything other than get an education and find mm-hmm. what we wanted to do.
So you weren't really told this is your future?
But as a young kid, I never wanted to do anything mm-hmm. other than build. It was just my DNA. And he never encouraged me to go into the business at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I was the only one. My older brother worked for a short period of time. And I ended up buying the business by myself. One of my younger brothers went through the craft end of the business, working for a carpenter for mm-hmm. a while, now works in the office with us for project manager. But he told me his father-in-law had told him, let your children be what they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
He said, my daddy wanted me to be a lawyer, and I don't like practicing law.
Yeah. Yeah, and he got it. Huh?
And my dad did that. As a matter of fact, my son, I learned that from my dad, who's in business with me today, once asked me why I never encouraged him to go into business. And I told him the same thing my dad had told me.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish more parents were like that, letting their children find their own way.
Yes.
I've read, and I can just tell from talking with you, not only do you love construction, but you love the science of building.
Yes.
And I want to put in the reputation you have for those, I'm sure everyone knows, but you have a reputation for being spot on in your estimating the cost of a project, but it's because you love what you do, and I'm
yes.
sure you investigate thoroughly. Can you talk about that? I mean, you studied this in college.
Yes, I did. I guess to sum it up in a few words, and we tell clients of that we tell them that you may pay for the building, but it's always ours, and that's how we feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we aspire to be builders. Today, so much of the construction work is done by people managing it that don't have the building skills. My dad was a builder. He was an engineer trained, but he very strongly believed in buildings, as was my nature. And so back in the late 80s and early 90s, when I started coming into a management role, I realized what was happening to our industry. And we have always aspired to try to attract people to us that have the building skills, skills that you mm-hmm. just can't teach. You can you either have it or don't have it. You know, when you were young, if you could take apart a lawnmower and put it back together, you have those building skills.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you a woman and you knew how to sew, you understand how to fit and piecing and making things work. And it's just an innate given skill that some people have. And we've tried to find those people and nurture them in our business, which makes us who we are today.
So you're comparing that to maybe just having the business getting things built.
That's correct.
You look at the core, the value of what's being made. Okay.
Yeah, the litmus test is will this particular element of the building stand the test of time? Mm-hmm. We challenge ourselves and the designers to trying to build the best building that we know how to build. Use the experience and skills we have to mm-hmm. so that it will last as long as it can.
I was looking online. You know, I wanted to mention too. I know you handled the renovation of the Hub City Ford showroom, which mm-hmm. was just a masterpiece, and very close with the Citroens. And I know my neighbor, Kevin Gossin, was an architect on that. You've worked with some really fine architects in our community. Would you name a few of those and maybe some of the works that you've partnered?
Yeah, well, you mentioned Kevin. We did several projects for Kevin, Hub City Ford being mm-hmm. one of them, which is rather interesting because it's not a prototype building. I don't know how the Citroens got away from getting away from the big blue emblems and Ford logos on buildings, but they did, and it was a fun project to do. But for Kevin, we did, we remodeled Fatima School for him. We did St. Our Lady Queen of Peace Church.
Oh, yeah, the rebuild, yeah.
Yes, we did the ESA
Lower School.
Lower School mm-hmm. on College Saloon Road for him, which is really a fun project.
I love that building, yeah.
But we've worked with a lot of very talented mm-hmm. architects. Matter of fact, we worked for nearly every architect in the community here. We did a lot of work years ago for Kevin's dad.
Gerald,
who was in a partnership with Don O'Rourke, O'Rourke and Gossin Architects. Mm-hmm. We worked with a firm at the time was Guidry Beasley Perkins Architects that we did a whole bunch of buildings for. And Bob Barra, Don Bro, partners. Mm-hmm. I'm drawing a blank right now, but we've always prided ourselves with being able to work for, mm-hmm. for different people. It's a team effort. Building is a team effort. It's not an individual effort.
Right.
I mean, it takes a team, an owner, an architect, and contractor to really develop a project as mm-hmm. it should be built.
I'm thinking about the longevity of your firm and the commitment to not only excellence, but making sure that the client gets what they wanted and that it's safe, as you were talking about. So your son, Stuart, I know is, you'll be looking at him, I guess, as a successor one day, and that'll be the fifth generation. And I didn't realize till I was researching your family, Popey, that it's very rare for a company to make it really past the second generation. It's very rare to be going into a fifth generation of leadership down the line.
I've been told that.
Yeah, but I mean, you've already talked about your values, but would you talk about that, the importance of this family
owned
business?
Yeah, well, first of all, Stuart is a partner with me right now, and I've my career was in partnership with my dad, and now Stuart and I are partners, mm-hmm. which is a business relationship I enjoy very much. I'm very fortunate. He has the passion. Mm-hmm. He has a passion for the business, and we'll just continue it on. I was prepared, and I would do it in a heartbeat if any of my children were not interested in the business. Although it's been in business a long time, mm-hmm. If there was not a successor to it, I would have shut it down.
And not sell it.
Sell it with mm-hmm. no regrets. Mm-hmm. I believe that everything in life has to answer to time, and sometimes those successions and things like that play out. Mm-hmm. At this point, ours has not played out. But that's just life.
Right.
That's how life goes.
Right. What did Stuart study in college?
Stuart studied he went to Auburn University and studied construction there. In fact, my Uncle Francis's son, John mm-hmm. Mouton, was head of the program over there. It's a fine school. And after Graduating from Auburn, he went to the University of New Orleans and got a master's degree in business, which is extremely unusual. Matter of fact, in all the people who finished in construction programs, I can't say I know another one who went on to get a business degree. So he was very ambitious beyond just the construction aspect
right.
of it. It's been a great asset to our partnership as
right.
well.
Right. So speaking of family, one of 17, what is the size of your family now with, all the siblings and nieces and nephews and
Well, you'd be surprised. I think it's about 28 grandchildren. My dad used to say he had a couple of them that were redshirted who didn't have children. But it's kind of neat. And it seems like most of the grandchildren are kind of close, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Really nice.
You're very
now
fortunate.
We have great grandchildren.
You do?
Well, my parents have great grandchildren.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yes, I have
huge family.
4 grandchildren mm-hmm. and this a few others. So
right, right. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you always make time for family because sometimes running a business can take over a person's life, and it seems like you and your family both try to balance that. Do you have any advice for people, young people in particular, going into business? If somebody was thinking, I'm intrigued by this, I might want to study construction management or become a builder, do you have advice for them?
Oh, yeah. And I counsel kids or young people. We take in interns from time to time. I always try to give them encouragement. But I think the bottom line is to find out what you want to do. If you don't like what you're doing, you'll never be successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
Find out whatever it is. Sometimes that goes against perhaps what a parent might try to direct their child to. But everybody has to find their calling and pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to instill in young people.
Right. And the internships are probably invaluable because they might think they want to go into building or construction and find out that it's not really what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Or vice versa.
Right.
Yes.
Love it. End up loving it. So
I guess that's one of the ways we give back. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, we had one of my wife's cousins who was studying engineering in Paris. He was from Paris, France. And he came over here to do an intern with us, which was very
mm-hmm.
interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you speak French?
No, I don't. I sure wish I did.
Me too. I wish I spoke it. My whole family
Mother spoke French. My dad understood it. And growing up, the only time I heard French around the house is when they didn't want me to know what
exactly,
they were saying.
Exactly, yeah. Then you knew you might be getting in trouble or they were talking about something good.
It's kind of nice, and I'm sure you feel that way, that having grown up in this kind of multicultural area, you know a lot of the sayings in French,
mm-hmm.
which is...
Just enough, huh? Un peu.
Un peu, yeah, that's right.
Well, Popey, we're here with Jason Sikora of Raider Solutions, and Jason will listen to conversations, and he's always got good questions, things I don't even think to ask. So,
you see the last one I wrote? Advice for someone that enjoys building.
Oh, okay. Yep. You can check that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I'll erase that one. I want to circle back to family, and I'm glad you brought it back up here at the end, Jan. And also, thank you for being here, Popey. This is awesome.
My pleasure.
So when you guys get together for the holidays, do you have to, like, rent a hall?
Yes. Towards the end, we did. Mom was always one to celebrate every occasion at the house. Of course, we had a big house. But, birthdays, we ate so much cake growing up. but cute story was later on when she outgrew our house and, there'd be 70 of us with friends and family and girlfriends and boyfriends at a occasion. She would celebrate the big family get-together on the Friday after Thanksgiving, because you didn't have to compete with other mm-hmm. in-laws.
Oh, boy, that's smart.
Yeah. And she rented a hall, and at the end of one of the get-together, I told my mother, who was very self-conscious, I said, "Mom, this was wonderful, thank you, but I have a recommendation for next year." And she looked at me very hesitantly. She said, "Oh, what's that?" I said, "You need to put name tags on all these people."
Yeah.
That make a lot of sense. Piggybacking off of advice, so for somebody who maybe enjoys building but doesn't know exactly what they want to do, which is probably most college kids these days, they go in and they don't really know what they want to do. What would be a good rounded thing for them to get into? Is it maybe engineering, or maybe going to a trade school and learning just general building, or?
There's a lot of construction programs around that vary from more industrial programs to more building programs to more highway and bridge programs. If they're interested in taking, in pursuing that, they need to find a school that can that they would be interested in. Louisiana, we have three public universities that teach construction: LSU, ULM, and Monroe, which is where I graduated from, and Louisiana Tech. And there's quite a few of them. When I went into construction in 1972, they probably had less than 10 schools in the whole nation.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, as old a profession as it was, there wasn't a construction program. The college-educated builders of those days came from either the architecture or the engineering discipline, as did my dad. Okay.
Oh.
And construction brought into it a lot of the management, the business skills, and those type things. But my advice to them would be find a program, try to get an internship, or try to get on with somebody in the building end to make sure it's something you'll enjoy.
Now, Popey, when you hire, if I can jump in, Jason, on that, when you're hiring your employees, not necessarily the management, but your employees that are helping you build these structures, do they need to be certified? We had Natalie Harder on recently from the community college, and she was talking about all the different types of certifications. What type of skill level do they need to be hired?
Well, we run what I guess has historically been called more of an open shop environment, in which they have, we take people of all different skill levels and put them in opportunities in our company to grow, primarily through mentorships with other people. As we recognize talents or desires from people to want to learn, we give them an opportunity to grow. And that's how we do it within our, we don't have certification or titles other than safety or equipment operation, as far as their overall skill set as a carpenter, laborer, whatever. There's no certification.
Right, right.
Excellent. In terms of building techniques, how much does technology play into it, and how much of it is really just the classic techniques that have been around for ages?
A lot of it is classic techniques, concrete work, that type of stuff. There are different types of form systems and all that you can do today. I think the big thing that's varied in the industry is the material types that we've had. Historically, when I was getting into the industry, or even as a kid working on construction jobs, it was brick, plaster, and glass. That was about it. And that was what an architect would call their palette.
Okay.
But today, architectural palettes have these high-end, what they call ACM panels, which you see on all the auto dealerships, and just a whole variety of other products. And that's what's changed today, is the availability of other products. And the challenge to us as builders is to study those products and make sure that we can incorporate them and get the longest life we have out of them. Sometimes products come in that are in other environments and haven't been tested in our environments, and we as a builder try to vet those products out to make sure the products out so that we can make sure that they're put into our projects as best possible.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So day-to-day basis, what's a day in the life of Popey? Is it more just management, or are you out there on the ground looking at buildings?
No, I do more of the inside work. We do a big portion of our work is supporting our client base and design professionals and design assisting them, telling them how we would recommend to them to design something or do preliminary budgeting. And that's my primary role today. The day-to-day operations are more closely handled by Stuart and some other folks mm-hmm. within our organization, and I like it. Works very well for me.
Excellent.
Be my age and be able to kind of pick and choose what you want to do in it.
Excellent. I have a few more things here. I know we're kind of running up on time here, so I'll combine these two. Is there any building or something that you'd like to do that you haven't done yet? And then secondly, what's the toughest challenge or the toughest building that you've done?
Okay. I had a goal in my career to be able to build a traditional church. Okay. And we had an opportunity to do that on St. Pius. So
okay.
That was, hardly anybody builds a traditional church anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a fulfilling for me to build that. Toughest projects we built, Stone Energy was a very interesting project. It was a very detailed project. But I guess one of the most fun ones that we've done that was technically challenging is, I guess about 8 or 9 years ago, we remodeled St. Charles College in Grand Coteau.
I was about to say that. It's
okay.
Beautiful.
And
it's ancient.
It was a historic mm-hmm. restoration in which we were trying to match details to mm-hmm. keep it within the historic consequence. So that was extremely detailed because we had to tear apart every window and rebuild it as it was built with the sash mm-hmm. balances, like mm-hmm. 300 windows. And
we did all the air conditioning and
everything.
All that. Yeah.
So that was a very mm-hmm. challenging. It was fun to build, and it was great people to work for. It
yeah.
was owned by the Jesuit order. But that was one of the more difficult ones.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent. Well, again, Popey, thank you for being
yeah.
here. And Dan, thanks for letting me ask some
questions. Oh, this is a great interview. Popey, I just came off a silent retreat mm-hmm. at the same, in the college.
Did you really?
The Jesuit Spirituality Center. And the rooms are so simple, and I saw that the windows don't open. We're not supposed to open them. I don't
yeah.
know if they do.
The bottom sash is open.
Right. But as you lay in bed, you're in this simple, and you know what it looks like. It's a simple
yeah.
room with just a bed and the chair and the little desk. But everything is pristine, and the ceiling is great, and the lights are all new, and everything works perfectly.
And it's quiet.
It's comfortable and quiet, and it's
yes.
so conducive to finding your place.
Yes.
Going within. So when I read you did that and the academy's the gallery, I guess
yes.
it was that those are tricky projects.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
200-year-old
yes.
building.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Have we asked what you thought we would? Is there anything that you wanted to say? We covered
it. Right.
Yeah. I want to encourage people to look up J.B. Mouton. Look on the website and see the beautiful structures that have been built. I mean, we're right here in the Light Center that you built, across the street, CGI. I mean, there's so many examples around Acadiana, but Robert Popey Bio, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you for having
to
me.
Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And thanks to our listeners. We appreciate your support. You can go to our website, discoverlafayette.net, to find this interview and all of our interviews. Also, look for us on iTunes, which is Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast. And please share the word. We're trying to build this archive of historical data, people that make our region great, such as Popey Bio. Thank you for listening. I'm Jan Swift.